So our next presentation is from Laura Poplawski, and she's going to be talking about the assessment of extracellular enzymes produced by fungi isolated from muscadine grapes. Welcome, Laura.
Good afternoon. Now your first question might be, why grapes? Grape is one of the world's most valuable fruit crops due to its multi-uses from fresh fruits to wines, juices, and jellies. It's the world's fourth highest production fruit crop and the 10 to 12th most valuable agricultural crop in the United States. We are focusing specifically on muscadine grapes, scientifically known as Vitis rotundifolia, which are distinct from all the other grape species due to its two extra chromosomes, which make sexual hybridization with bunch grapes difficult. In nature, all vines are either male or female, and although breeders have created some self-fertile varieties. Muscadine grapes are located throughout the southeastern U.S., but concentrated in Georgia, North Carolina, and Arkansas. Now, there's a great potential for increased production. Muscadine grapes are harvested ripe off the vine, as they do not ripen appreciably after harvest, which creates an already pretty limited shelf life. And disease issues such as fungal infections can greatly further reduce this shelf life. By studying the physiology of the fungal diseases, we can more accurately implement techniques such as precision breeding to introduce genes that will give antifungal fungal resistance. And this improved shelf life will definitely allow for better marketing strategies. Our problems are that pre- and post-harvest is problematic because of fungal infections, and we are focusing mostly on post-harvest because it presents a storage problem. Rots are caused by fungi that produce extracellular hydrolytic enzymes that degrade plant cell walls, especially the little lamellae, which acts as the glue in between the cells. And the very rot has been attributed in the literature to Colitotrichum lilius viridis, but we also routinely isolated Pestilotia microspora. So our objective is to characterize the extracellular hydrolytic and oxidative enzymes produced by Colitotrichum and Pestilotia in order to determine if both organisms are capable of causing or contributing to berry rot of muscadine grapes. First, we had to isolate and identify the fungi from the rotting grapes. Fungi were isolated from rotting muscadine grapes in solid medium amended with antibiotics and then grown in potato dextrose broth for 10 days. Mycelium were ground with buffer and liquid nitrogen using mortar and pestle, and the DNA isolated using the DNEZ mini kit from QIAGEN. The internally transcribed spacer region was amplified using PCR with primers ITS 1 and 4 from White 1990. The purified amplified DNA was sequenced, and a consensus sequence was checked against GenBank entries for identification. We only used isolates that had the correct spore type and GenBank ID over 98%. Of our 12 isolates, 5 were identified as Colitotrichum gluteus viridis, which for the rest of the presentation will be bolded, and the other 7 were Pestilotia microspora. Oftentimes, the isolate code comes from the cultivar of grape from which it was isolated. So, for example, cow stands for cowan, and cow 2 there is highlighted because, unfortunately, soon after the project began, we lost that isolate. So you won't be seeing that on other slides. We used a variety of assays to assess the activities of amylase, lipase, polyphenol oxidases, cellulase, xylanase, and pectinase. Inoculum for various tests were grown for 10 days on potato dextrose agar before the test, and the enzyme activities were evaluated using silified media assays, isolated protein assays, and polyacrylamide gel electrophoresis. For the rest of the presentation, I've broken the test down to their test procedures and the corresponding results to make it a little bit easier to follow. Solidified media was amended with the appropriate substrate and inoculated with each isolate using a plug with the mycelium side down. Isolates were grown for 10 days, and the activity assessed as follows. Medium incorporating starch tested for amylase and was flooded with potassium iodide solution. Clear zones where the potassium iodide would not hold to the media indicates activity. All isolates of both fungi produce this clear zone and therefore produce amylase. Media incorporating tween 80 tests for lipase because a flocculant or white precipitation will occur in the medium in the presence of the enzyme. Again, all isolates of both fungi produce lipase. And media with gallic acid in it will darken around the inoculation point in the presence of polyphenol oxidase, as you can see in this example plate here. All isolates of both fungi produce this darkened area, so produce polyphenol oxidase. The rest of the tests use total protein that was induced in a liquid medium containing the appropriate substrate and isolated by salting out with ammonium sulfate at 90% saturation and dialysis against water. This total concentrated protein was assessed using solid and liquid substrate assays, reducing sugars, and polyacrylamide gel electrophoresis. Now, just a note on some of the terms that you might see. A lot of these tests look for either endoenzymes or exoenzymes. Endoenzymes act on the middle of the compound, as you can see with C1 and CX2, and chop that compound into smaller segments, whereas exoenzymes act only on that last monomer, like CX1, and produce reducing sugars instead. Isolated cellulases and pectinases were applied to agarose plates containing the appropriate substrate and then flooded with a staining solution. Cleared zones for both indicate activity, as you can see in these two example plates here, with endocellulase as the cleared zone on the left and endopectinase on the right. All isolates of both fungi produce these clear zones. Exoenzyme assays were done for cellulase and xylanase by determining the activities of total protein and reducing sugars using DNSA. Standard curves were created using linear regression by using known concentrations of BSA, as you can see on the top, and D-glucose, as you can see on the bottom. Those, you can see the range of colors there from the known concentrations, from zero, a water control, all the way to 5 mg/mL. This is a measurement of activity of all enzymes, but it's primarily expressed as exoenzymes because of that reducing sugar unit. On the left is a standard curve that you can see that we use to calculate the approximate activity of cellulase on the right, which is expressed as micromoles of D-glucose equivalent per milligram of total protein per hour. Now, across the board, we had quite a bit of activity, but we especially saw a lot of activity in our isolate P1, which is a Pestalozzi isolate. Very similarly, on the left is the standard curves we used to calculate approximate activity of total xylanase, and on the right, the results we got. And again, we had very high results for actually all of our isolates here. We performed a liquid substrate assay for polyphenol oxidases by applying 0.5 mL of the total protein to the following substrates: gallic acid, catechol, L-DOPA, serum gelaldehyde, and ABTS, which covers both mono and polyphenol oxidases. The reactions were incubated overnight, and the color changes rated on a scale from 1 to 4, with 1 being no change in color from the water control, and 4 being the most color development. These numbers were then used to create this paint diagram on the right, as a picture of all the test tubes at once is a little overwhelming to interpret. However, we did include two pictures of test tubes we used as an example of how we kind of made our rating there, with the left test tube, which only has a light green tint to it, as the number 1 for ABTS, that was our water control, and the right test tube was our commercial lactase control of ABTS, which was rated a 4 because it was among the darker of colors. As you can see, there's a good bit of color throughout all the isolates, but we definitely see stronger colors in the Pestalozzi isolates, which are highlighted in red down there. We also performed polyacrylamide gel electrophoresis for polyphenol oxidases, cellulase, pectinase, and xylanase. The polyphenol oxidase gel was washed in a succinate buffer containing ABTS, which has that green color to it. The other gels, however, incorporated the specific substrates and then were washed in a staining solution, which would express the endoenzymes. This is a good technique for detecting isozymes, which are enzymes that perform the same function but might differ in size, substrate specificity, or activity. 10 microliters of total protein was added to each well before electrophoresis. It's a little difficult to see with this lighting, but there are green bands that symbolize enzyme activity for polyphenol oxidase using ABTS. We've got some arrows pointing them out. The lactase control and our two Pestalozzi microspora isolates produced small green bands towards the top of the gel, whereas our two colitotricum isolates, interestingly enough, produce longer, more of smears towards the bottom of the gel, indicating just a different isozyme. For endocellulase, the clear zones indicate activity where the stain won't hold. And you can definitely see two distinct areas for Pestalozzi microspora and one definite area for colitotricum and potentially another isozyme lower down on the gel, indicated by the dashed line. And we saw very similar results for endopectinase, where the clear zones again indicate activity, with two isozymes for Pestalozzi and one, maybe another, for colitotricum. Overall, all isolates of both fungi exhibited activity on both solidified media and in liquid induction media. All isolates hydrolyzed starch and lipids. All isolates oxidized different phenolic substrates. And all isolates produced both endo and exo cellulases, pectinases, and xylanases. So both Calotrichum and Pestilotia produce the enzymes that are typically associated with fruit rot. Although isolates of both fungi produce these enzymes, we believe Pestilotia may produce more than Calotrichum, as seen by some of the darker colors and different bands on those results. And although literature only associates Calotrichum with muscadine berry rot, we believe Pestilotia may be a secondary invader and cause significant degradation of the fruit later on. And an interesting note, both fungi produce phenolic oxidases, which may play an important role in overcoming plant defenses. Phenols, which are commonly toxic to fungi, are abundant in grape skins and fruit, so production of these enzymes that would break down these phenolic substrates would definitely help the progression of the disease. And just thanks and acknowledgement to the Specialty Crops Research Initiative for funding our research. Any questions?
I think you may have asked if the original, the fungi, were they the original cause of the rot, or do you think it was, you know, secondary, just hop on there after they're already going down?
The question being whether these are both secondary invaders or whether they are both there originally. In the literature, it's commonly thought that Calotrichum is the initial invader. But we believe Pestilotia could be a secondary invader, or they could be acting synergistically to take down the cell walls together. But it is believed that Calotrichum is a primary invader. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.